Please go ahead. The call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone, to the GNSO Council meeting on the 7th of October, 2010. We have an extremely full agenda, so we'll move right ahead. Glenn, would you please do a roll call of the members?
Thank you, Chuck. I will. Chuck Gomes?
Here.
Caroline Greer?
Present.
Edmund Chun?
Here.
Adrian Kinderis?
Here.
Tim Ruiz?
Here.
Stefan van Gelder?
Here.
We have apologies from Terry Davis. Zaid Jamil?
Here.
Christina Rosette?
Here.
Mark Rodenbach?
Here.
David Taylor?
Here.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben? Wolf Ulrich, are you there? He's on mute. Jamie Wagner? And Jamie has got, I think, problems too with mute. Rafik Damak?
Here.
Bill Drake? Deborah Hughes?
Here.
Wendy Seltzer? Wendy is on mute. Bill Drake has just joined now. Rosemary Sinclair?
Here.
Mary Wong? I don't think Mary's on the call. Olga Cavelli?
Here.
Andre Koleshnikov?
Yes, I'm here.
Helen Greenberg?
Here.
Han Chuan Lee? Han Chuan is probably on mute. And for staff, we have Craig Schwartz, David Olive, Rob Hogarth, Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, Marika Koenig, Kurt Tritz, David Clausens from our technical staff, and Alex Kulik from our technical staff. Thank you very much, Chuck. Over to you.
Thank you, Glenn. I want to thank everyone who submitted disclosures of interest. Keep in mind that's a process, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the meeting, that is being looked at again. So bear with us while we work through some of the concerns that have been raised in that regard. But again, thanks to those of you who submitted disclosures of interest. For those of you like myself that have given some in the past, the way I worded it, I think when I encourage people to do that is if they haven't changed, that's okay. And my mind, for example, has not been changed, but we won't ask everybody to go through and say that. Does anyone else have a disclosure of interest regarding any agenda items that may not have already been covered in your statement of interest? Please raise your hand or speak up if you do.
Chuck, this is Tim.
Okay, Tim.
Not a disclosure, I guess more of a clarification. Just does every counselor need to submit a DOI every meeting, or is it only if you have something to declare?
It's only, in my opinion, Tim, it's only if you have something to declare that's specific to an agenda item for that meeting.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
Okay, and again, we're going to be working on this, and we'll talk about it a little bit later in the agenda as well, in terms of the approach forward on that. But a good question, Tim. Anybody else have anything on the disclosures of interest? Okay. Thanks to both Adrian and Tim for submitting revisions to their revisions to their statements of interest. I don't, unless somebody particularly wants to do it, or unless Adrian or Tim want to do it, we won't necessarily take time to review those right now because I think everybody can see it on the list. Does anyone want Adrian or Tim to go over the changes in their interest statements? Just speak up. And, of course, Adrian and Tim, if you want to say anything, you're welcome to, but you don't have to. Okay, going on to the agenda itself, any suggested changes or new items on the agenda? Okay. Note that the minutes for the 8th September meeting were approved on the 30th of September, and those are available on site. So that takes care of that. Going on to item number 2 in the agenda, the new GTLD board resolutions from the board retreat, and there's a link provided in the agenda to those resolutions. If you want to refer to it, and it looks like they're being loaded in Adobe Connect right now. Let me ask right now, is there anybody, Tim, were you able to get into Adobe? I guess I can look here whether you were able to get into Adobe Connect. It doesn't look like you were unless I overlooked it.
No, I'm on an iPad this morning, and it requires Flash, which isn't supported. So.
Okay, that's okay. I just wanted to confirm. Anybody else not on Adobe Connect? Please speak up when you want to get in the queue. Now, Kurt Fritz is on the call with us this morning, and I want to ask Kurt to share some introductory comments that will hopefully address some of the questions that a lot of us have with regard to the board resolutions from their retreat regarding especially the new GTLDs. Kurt, it's all yours.
Thanks, Chuck, and thanks, everyone, for having me. And it's good to talk to you. Does everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So as you know, the board spent, 2 focused days in Trondheim on new GTLD issues. As you can see through the resolution, they reserved a couple hours at the end to convene an actual board meeting and pass some resolutions, some giving direction and guidance for what should go into the next version of the applicant guidebook, and then some other items too. So I'm just gonna the staff work in preparation for the board retreat will largely be made public, I believe, before the next board meeting, which is in a couple weeks. As part of the notes for that meeting. Notably for the meeting, they passed a new GTLD budget, so ICANN can start spending on expenses one wouldn't ordinarily expense unless the launch of the program was to a fair degree certain that it was going to happen. So I think that's notable. And then on the rest of the agenda items, many of them, not all of them, but many of them had been discussed in depth before. And so those issues are sort of, I think, whittled down to some very specific questions. And so, wherever we could, we put the questions to the board, that essentially this issue is settled, except, there's a choice between this and this. Here's the pros and cons for each. So we tried to make the issues clear for the board. The board's certainly very engaged, and they're certainly across each of these issues and have an in-depth understanding of what's in the guidebook. So I've been reading the email list, and I just want to talk on a couple of the items that seem to be chatted about quite a bit, and then I can take a couple questions. We don't have much time allotted for this, but we'll do the best we can. So I saw a lot of chatter about applicant support, and especially since there's been a working group formed for that purpose, and they worked very hard to issue a report before this meeting. And on that issue, the board basically said that they want to support applicants in all regions. That in the case of sort of non-financial support, whether it be outreach, education, or some sort of training, the board was for that. And as a matter of fact, has allocated about $300,000 in the deployment and operations budget for new GTLDs. And on the issue of providing direct financial support of applicants, they pended that decision out you know, awaiting some definition of criteria by which financial support could be awarded, and you know, what the sources of that support would be. So they directed staff to set aside funds for non-financial support. They directed staff to work to find sources of funds, trust and the like, and then the discussion should continue on criteria and sources of funds. So that's it on applicant support. On vertical integration, as you know, they've asked the GNSO to state whether or not consensus could be reached in the very near term on this issue. And I've in fact seen a rapid reaction in response to that. I saw a proposed motion by Chuck, and I think the board here wants, you know, they've seen the work, you know, the voluminous and it's not just voluminous, it's meaningful work of the vertical integration working group. And before the board makes a statement on, you know, what model should go into the next version of the guidebook, they wanted to hear, with some degree of certainty from the GNSO that consensus is not going to be reached on this issue in the near term. So for me, that's kind of straightforward, and I was gratified to see Chuck's proposed resolution on that as a way of moving the issue forward. But I think that's what the board was looking for there, some degree of certainty that they were correct in choosing to move ahead with their own discussions on it. And then on the Morality and Public Order Recommendation 6 Working Group, the board statement there really is that they just got the report just before the meeting. They had been through it to some degree, but not a degree to which decisions could be made or even the right issues could be framed up. It's kind of happened too fast. So what they've asked for is a staff report to give them some way of framing up the issues in the report and some advice so that they decisions off it. They said in their resolution that when they first discussed morality and public order, they had right that we've talked about quite a bit. One was, you know, creating a process that avoided, risk to ICANN and the new GTLD process. And the other goal is the policy goal of providing a straightforward, clear, transparent, predictable path for applicants. So to the extent that to which the recommendation 6 recommendations, I'll call them, are in concert with that. You know, the board wants to accommodate, suggestions of this portion of the community. And to the extent they don't, they want to question those. I think there's a question, too, out there about the weight of the working group and that it's a, you know, on the good side, it's a formidable working group and demonstrated for one of the first times in ICANN the ability to work across SOs and ACs, which is terrific and a model for the future. And so we need to look at that in against the bylaws and the way we create and make policy and, the effect of that. So to make sure that we're not violating the bylaws in any way. But that's sort of an esoteric side argument. So those are the three issues I saw talked about the most, and we don't have time to go through all of them. What one of the things I should have made at the outset was that, resolutions that seem clear when you've been working 4 hours in a room of 31 people in the cold light of public discussion become less clear and somewhat vague. So I'm happy to provide, to the extent I can, additional clarification wherever that's possible. So with those clarifications so far, I'll take this wherever you want to take it.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt. And please raise your hand or speak up if you'd like to get in the queue here. I would like to ask those who do have questions for Kurt if you would just give one question at a time, because we do have limited time. And then if there's time, we'll come back to you again. And please make your question brief and to the point. Kurt, I do want to, while people are thinking about that, ask you, you mentioned that before the board meeting on the 28th of October, additional information about the resolutions and the retreat will be provided. Can you elaborate at all in terms of what kind of information would likely be made public in that regard?
Yeah, so this is me talking and not the general counsel's office, so there's no guarantees, but the notes from each board meeting are posted before the next board meeting, and so the notes from this meeting will be posted, and I believe they'll include some or all of the staff materials for the board, as has been the practice for the last couple board meetings.
So the background material that was provided to the board would be provided?
Excuse me?
Would the background material, any documents or briefings that were prepared for the board at the retreat, would that kind of information be posted?
So I believe that's the plan. I we've done that for the last couple of board meetings, and I talked to two of our legal staff before this, and that's every indication that we'll continue that practice. The papers are a series of, if you can imagine, 13 papers per meeting. So they're fairly brief by board standards, straightforward papers, 3 to 4 pages each that are, assume a good deal of knowledge on behalf of the board, which they demonstrated during the meeting, and then try to get to the heart of the issue in each case.
Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate that. Mike?
hi, Kurt. My question's on the string similarity resolution. It's pretty vague. It just says similar strings should not be delegated. Should we assume that at least means confusingly similar, as put out the GNSO's recommendations? And then you say further policy work in the area is encouraged. Do you have anything particular in mind? Do you think this is worthy of a PDP or some sort of a special implementation team?
So I had trouble hearing you, Mike, but if I caught your question, it's that the board thought that additional policy work was required to establish the rules by which similar strings can be delegated, that they got from the GNSO letter right away that there could be benefits to delegating similar strings in certain circumstances, but also they have a pretty good understanding of what those issues are and how complicated they are because of the discussions around the delegation of Chinese variants, which are visually not similar, but variants nonetheless, and the operational policy and technical issues associated with that. So they think that what they're saying here is more, it's not an implementation issue. It's really a policy discussion.
Okay, so it's referring specifically to IDN similar variant strings, really, not rather than anything to do with confusingly similar issues. Well, of course, those issues are joined together, but I see what you're saying. So this is referring to the GTL, the IDN GTLD variants, though, more than anything. Okay. So we do need to do some further work in that area, and we need to figure out what the next steps are, I guess. Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks, yeah. Mike. Alan?
Yeah, two things. For just a very quick note that I think, Kurt, I think you said that briefing materials are posted prior to the next board meeting. If that's the case, I'll note that the August 5th materials are not yet posted. But my specific question is, in Resolution 1 on the GTLD program budget, it says is a link to be inserted when available to the budget. When will that budget be actually be available? Presumably, it exists if the board approved it.
I'll go find out. So there was a budget posted prior to this, and there have been some changes. It's a little bit larger in the deployment area, but to take into account, for example, applicant support and a couple other line items. But it's essentially the same in content and theory, and I'll get a date when that's going to be posted right away.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan and Kurt. Rosemary.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. Kurt, my question was about your comment that in regard to, I think it's 2.9, the resolution about the recommendation objection process, that there was a question, and I'm not sure I've got this right, but there was a question in regard to the bylaws, and I think the question is going to whether we can work cross-community in the way we did for this particular item. I wonder if you could just clarify that, because it's AM here in Sydney, so I may not have got it right. And if, after that, would you just let us know what the next steps are?
Yeah, so, again, this is my personal opinion. First of all, I think that working across SOs and advisory committees is, just vital to the success of the bottom-up process. When we look at the questions in front of us, they involve nearly all the groups. You know, what's the difference between a GTLD and CCTLD, I think, has to be answered with the policy development work on IDNs coming up and other issues of the like. So to the extent that the group is providing implementation advice, it's essentially a group of across the ICANN community that got together and said, we have some implementation advice on this. So that has some amount of weight. And then to the extent those reports are endorsed by SOs and ACs or tweaked by, either the at-large advisory committee or the GNSO or another SO or AC, that gives it a different kind of weight. And then certainly if it's policy advice or policy recommendation and not just implementation advice, then there's the issue of how do we create policy. There's not a mechanism in the bylaws. The bylaw rules are fairly straightforward for creating policy, and so I think this is a question we have to address going forward: how do we take a great discussion that happened in this recommendation sets working group and make it part of the a more standard part of the ICANN process? So I hope that was clear. So I divided up. Yeah, go ahead.
Chuck, could I get in the queue, please? This is Tim.
Sure, Tim. Did you want to talk on this particular issue or just get in the general queue?
On that particular issue, actually.
Okay, why don't you just jump in right now, and then Kurt still has part of Rosemary's question to answer, but go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct one implication, I think. I don't know if it's intended or not, but just listening to the discussion so far on this, it sounds as if, this concept of cross-community working, that this is something new, and that is just not true. In fact, since the GNSO has been using working groups to do its policy work and drafting teams, et cetera, that those have been cross-community. The whole community is invited to participate in those, and, if any part of the community doesn't, that's a choice that they made. That's not, they haven't been excluded. So this cross-community work has been an important factor of the GNSO improvements and what we've been trying to do, and I think we've done an excellent job of it. And so this is not something new. I think the issue is primarily, trying to make decisions about what is simply implementation and what's policy or making that kind of distinction. I think that's the issue, not that cross-community is some kind of new idea that we are pursuing. It's we've been doing this for a long time.
Thank you, Tim. And let me ask everyone to, again, try to be as brief as possible. We're already over time, but I'm going to try and pick up time later in the meeting. I hope we're successful. I would like to cut the queue off right now for questions and cover the people that are in queue. And, Kurt, I'll turn it back to you to answer the second part of Rosemary's question.
Rosemary has to repeat the second part for a question.
The second part, I think, and let me see if I can do it. What are the next steps?
Well, I think Tim was helpful there. I'm not so sure. I think Tim's right in that we've worked together across that before. I think we just have to be careful that any policy we develop is developed in a way that complies with the bylaws, and consider if bylaws need to change in order to accommodate policy that's developed across associations or not, or you know, maybe a study would say, you know, we can use the existing model and just have cross SOAC working group supporting that. So I think some sort of analysis around that needs to be done.
Chuck, if I could just finish with a final comment. It seems to me that the cross community working group is an existing model, and the reports come back to the GNSO Council that operates in its policy management role. I'm not sure that there's too much to review in terms of the effectiveness of that process, but I'm happy if any such review comes back to the Council, of course, as the policy managing body. Thank you.
Yes, and now with Kurt, the question that Rosemary asked with regard to what are the next steps with regard to the new GTLD process?
Well, with regard to the new GTLD process itself, the board did not have time to digest the full report in time for the Trondheim retreat. Staff is going to help them, distill the report. It's a long report representing a lot of work, so staff is going to distill that down into the recommendations and issues raised, and so that the board can have a succinct discussion about what can be included from that report into the next version of the guidebook.
Okay. Let me go to Bill. And, Bill, if you'd like to give your disclosure of interest now, you may.
Disclosure of interest? I have no interest.
Oh, you have no interest. I thought I saw something on the chat that you... Okay, ignore that. Let's just go on. What's your question?
No, I was kidding about something. Hi, I just wanted to ask, I'm trying to decipher the text of the resolution about 6. It says that the board will accept the Rec 6 recommendations that are not inconsistent with the existing process. Kurt, could you give me some idea what existing process we mean, and maybe some examples of recommendations that would not be inconsistent with it, so that we have some idea of what we're talking about?
Yeah. So, as I stated, I'm trying to read it right now. But when I started, the board discussion focused on twin goals of, in the process of considering GTLD applications against really sort of complex issues, and we had considered, morality and public order policy recommendation, one of the most complex and challenging of all. We all had two goals going in. One was to construct a process that sort of addressed the risks. So, there's litigation risk, there's schedule delay risks, there's reputational risk to ICANN and the process. So we wanted to create a process that mitigated those risks. And then two is we wanted to provide a clear, predictable path for applicants. And that's one of the policy recommendations too. And so an example would be, and you know, I read the report right when it came out, so I don't know how this applies to it exactly, but you know, a process that would be open-ended in time, not time certain, or not with you know, the inability for an applicant to know what standards against which his application would be measured going forward. So a recommendation that either gets rid of standards or gives a, you know, makes us unable to predict the timeline for the applicants would be difficult because it would go against one of the policy recommendations.
Thank you, Kurt. Christina.
Sure. Hi, Kurt. I was hoping you could reconcile for me the statements in the October 2009 background or explanatory memo on mitigating malicious conduct, in which the high security zone TLD was identified as a mechanism that should be implemented in connection with the introduction of new gTLDs in order to fully mitigate risk. So those statements, on the one hand, against the statement in the board resolution that nothing further needs to be done.
I don't see where it says nothing further needs to be done. So to normalize the rationalization.
Okay, to be more precise, to be more precise, that the implementation work completed to date is sufficient to proceed to launch the first new gTLD application round.
So what it says is that as far as two things. One is, as far as mitigating malicious conduct, there's nine definitive improvements that have been put into the guidebook based on the work of, you know, first the ISG, the Anti-Phishing Working Group. The board said that those are that represents good work in mitigating malicious conduct, and we should launch the guidebook. And it also says that work should continue on the HSTLD, which doesn't need to be operational for some time, and that the board cautioned staff that there are risks associated with an ICANN-operated HSTLD program that, you know, this isn't exactly my area, but say there's an HSTLD program for financial services, and that a bank that's certified to that program loses its data to the public somehow, as sometimes happens with, in some cases, not necessarily with financial institutions, but other institutions having secure data. So, you know, then, you know, ICANN is the certifying agency, but without any real power or ability to stop leaks of data like that, would be in a bad position. So the board cautioned against ICANN operating that program, and rather directed the development of the program, you know, to complete development of the program and have that be picked up by some outside agency.
No, I understand that, and I appreciate the further elaboration. But you know, the fact remains is that in that initial explanatory memo, that program was identified as one component that needed to be implemented in order to mitigate the risk of malicious conduct. So there does seem to be some kind of inconsistency there, and you know, it would be helpful if we could perhaps discuss it further offline so that the council can move forward.
Okay.
And follow up to that suggestion, Christina, I would like to suggest that everyone who has additional questions on this or needs additional clarification on anything that Kurt's responded to please send your request to the council list, and I'll ask staff to help make sure that that Kurt sees all those. He may see them automatically, although I don't know if he's able to keep up with the entire council list. So please do that, and hopefully additional clarification can be given on the list then. Let's go to Alan.
Yeah, thank you. I'm talking with regard to the Section 2.2 on new gTLD applicant support. My first comment is, if
the board resolution had said anything near what you said, Kurt, the community reaction would have been significantly diffused. Although I understand the difficulty of wording things on the fly, you saying any further action on fees will be deferred until a criteria is established is very different from what the resolution said, that the fee levels will not change, period. The resolution also ignored things like installment payments and proposed a mechanism which seems to be saying that there's going to have to be an expression of interest process for poor applicants, because I don't see how ICANN can publish a list of requests prior to the applications being submitted, which will be necessary in order for the applications to be submitted. So can you clarify any? Because these are just very different from what the words say, and the words that are there don't seem to be implementable.
Well, the first sentence says that support to applicants will generally include outreach and education. So that's so we put $300,000 aside for that, but that any direct financial support must come from sources outside ICANN. So what the board is saying there is that the application fees are and the spending of them is a zero sum game. And as somebody who's gone over the numbers, I'll tell you that it is a zero sum game. And it's very close. And then the second paragraph says that staff's going to go to work and publish a list of organizations that may help provide additional support to applicants outside of ICANN. And that what?
I was going to say, and a list of those needing support.
Okay, well, my suggestion is that we continue this on the list because we're way past time. Let me get to Edmund, and I had cut the queue off after Edmund, so Rafiq, I'm going to ask you to submit your question on the list. Let's go ahead and go to Edmund on this one. Sorry, Alan, but
okay,
we're
fine.
Way past.
So I just wanted to tell Alan that the discussion went about, the applicant support group is encouraged to continue work in developing criteria that work for awarding support and finding sources of support.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Edmund?
Thank you. Just a couple of things. One on geographic names and the other one on variant management. On geographic names, it's kind of interesting it seems to me a mixed message in a way. It says that in the first paragraph it says about not expanding to include translations. On the second paragraph it talks about continents and UN generation, UN regions, and it doesn't talk about translations in the UN regions part. I wanted to get a sense of whether translations apply to both sides, whether shouldn't be included in translations in both subnational places and also in the continents and UN regions. That's the geographic names part. And on the variant management part, I guess Kurt might be and others might be aware that there's the joint IDN group between the GNSO and the CCNSO, and we've been discussing about the variant management issue. I observe that there's the CEO issues report that is supposed to be created. I wonder what the interaction should be or how you see the interaction should be between the GNSO, CCNSO joint, the JIG, the joint IDN group, specifically on this issue and how it plays into the variant management thing. So these two items.
On geographic names, it's really the board considered two issues. One was the ISO 3166-2 list of subnational names, and there's about 5,000 or so names on that list, and including some translations. And so one question is, should we include all translations of all names on that list? And after community discussion, reading the very recent GAC letter, it was decided that, five thousand names times, many, many translations would the detriments would outweigh the benefits of that, the number of names that have been blocked, the number of generic names that would be blocked in many languages. So on the first issue of the 3166-2 list of subregional names, more translation than those already on the list won't be included. On the issue of regional and continental names, we decided to add one more official UN list of protected names to that. I think there's five names on the whole list. So, and I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it's translations of those. So, we're including five more names, which is a lot different from 5,000. So they were kind of bifurcated.
So there's no relation between the translation, or
There's no relation between. There's two separate issues. One is the list of 5,000 subnational names on the ISO 3166-2 list. That's one, and two is. We received a letter requesting protection for the Arab region, and we augmented the list by that list of regional or continental names by five names. That's on, I think it's a UNESCO list. So it's really two different issues on geographic names. I guess I'm not being clear to you. And then on variant management, the board directed staff that the study of variant management needs, and the delegation of variants needs to be resolved. And the first step to doing that would be to staff up the program from a staff support standpoint. And so the first step to get that issues paper done is for Rod to give us and a project plan to the board by this upcoming board meeting so that an issues report can be submitted. That issues report will include, how we're going to combine the work of the JIG and the IDN PDP and the CCNSO and other groups working on IDNs. So we all drive toward the same variant solution in the near term. But the very short-term task is just, that A and B by October 28th to provide a staffing plan.
Thank you very much, Kurt. And, Edmund, if you need more follow-up on that, please request it on the list. We're going to move on. Thank you, Kurt, for spending the time with us and answering some questions and giving some overview information. We will look forward to the information that's posted in advance of the October 28th board meeting, and hopefully that will answer even more questions at that time. I want to move right to the motion, because one of the things that was asked by the board was a response from the GNSO with regard to the VI issue, and we have a motion on the table, and unless somebody wants me to read the whereases, since I made the motion, I will read just the resolution, the two resolution sentences. Resolve that the GNSO Council acknowledges that the VI Working Group is unable to achieve a consensus by the board requested date of 8 October 2010. Resolve further that the GNSO Council hereby approves the draft response copied below to the ICANN board and directs staff to forward the response to the ICANN secretary. And I'd like to call attention to the fact that the VI PDP working group did send the statement that this is based on as referenced in the whereas clauses above. Is there any discussion on this motion? Please raise your hand or speak up in the case of Tim. And Edmund, I assume that your hand's up from before.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hearing no one needing discussion or seeing no hands raised, does anyone object to a voice vote this motion? Okay. Seeing no hands or hearing no one. All in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
If anybody opposes, please state your name. And if anybody abstains, please state your name. Okay. That motion carries unanimously for those on the call. And let's go then to the request from Cheryl Langdon Orr from the ALAC. Now, let me warn you right up front. We're not going to have we could spend a half hour to an hour on this issue alone based on the discussion I've seen. So I would like to, point out we're going to maybe spend 5 minutes on this, so we're going to have to be very brief, and I'll make a suggestion maybe as a way forward on this based on the discussion I've seen. Rafiq, you want to say something?
I am acting as Janice liaison for the GIS working group. I want to confirm that the members of working group asked, they agreed to ask to have that request to have all the board material, etc., used during the board retreat in regard of the for the resolution for the assisting applicants from developing country.
Right. And so let me make sure I understand, and I think I've seen the request, but let's make sure that everybody understands. So the request is that the supporting material that was presented to the board at the retreat for, in particular, the case of the applicant support, be made public? Is that what the request is?
Yeah, all the different documents. Because it's we had a discussion about that in the conf call next to after the board retreat and the resolution, and then we agreed to have that request, and think that we even sent the share, our co-share sent request in regarding that.
Yes, I saw that request. So now, with regard to the, I may come back to you in a minute in terms of your request to make sure that we're addressing it. Based on what Kurt shared with us, that additional material is going to be shared, made public, not just to the GNSO, but public in general. Before the 28 October board meeting, does it make sense for us to wait until we see what is published before requesting things, or is there interest in us either joining with the ALAC and others, or even doing it separately in requesting specific information regarding the board retreat, the context, the supporting materials, et cetera. And I'll just call for a raise of hands in that regard. Alan.
Yeah, I think the issue with the working group is trying to finalize its report, and it would be prior, presumably, to the October meeting, it would be useful to have those materials so we can understand and adapt the report because of it, rather than wait till after the fact when it's too late.
Okay, so specifically with regard to the applicant support resolution from the board retreat, the materials would be requested sooner than that. Is that correct?
That was certainly the intent.
Okay, very good. And then so we'll come back to that, Bill.
I guess I would just like to think that we could establish a sort of clear list of what we think would be appropriate to be shared in advance, rather than waiting and finding out what is shared and then trying to guess what more could be provided and so on. It just seems to me better to do it ex ante rather than ex post. And I would have thought also that, you know, again, as I suggested before, it seems to me that this could be kind of a standard practice to be fairly clear about precisely what our expectations are in this regard.
Thank you, Bill. Well, and let me follow up directly with that. How about if we solicit three or four volunteers who would develop that list, share it as quickly as possible on the list, and submit it. If we don't have time to develop the list on the call today, plus it probably needs a little bit more attention anyway. And then just as long as there's no oppositions on the council list, no later than a week from now, submitting that list. And I'd be happy to do it if the on behalf of the council, if there's no objections to handling it that way, and everybody will get a chance to chime in if they have any concerns about what's being requested. So let me ask: are there any volunteers that would be willing to develop a list of information that we would like? We've already had a suggestion from those that are on the Jazz Working Group, and hopefully someone, one of those people, either Alan or Rafiq, will volunteer to be a part of this group. Would you raise your hand if you're willing to help on that? And this is something that's going to have to be done, you know, in the next couple days, and then submitted to the list and allowing time. So, Bill, Bill and Rafiq, thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to? I've heard others that are...
Yeah.
Olga,
ask Olga, please, Chuck.
Okay, Olga and Zahid, okay. Others are welcome to join that. So if it's a small enough group that I would assume you could just start corresponding with yourself and then submit something to the council list this week, if at all possible, by the end of the day tomorrow, so that give a couple days for council responses. Any comments or objections to this approach, please raise your hand. Bill, did you want to comment further? Okay, the hands went down, so that was just in response to my first question there. That's great. All right, let's do it that way. Now, another general question is that I need to obviously respond to Cheryl with regard to her request. I obviously can tell her what we're doing with regard to requests that we're making. Let me ask a fairly specific question, I think. What's the sense of the council? Would you rather that this just come from the GNSO, or once we see it and it seems to be consistent with what the ALAC wants, do you want to join with them or just do it independently? Any thoughts on that? Please raise your hand and share your thoughts.
Well, this is Tim. Could I get in the queue?
Sure, Tim. You're in right now.
If we're just talking about, you know, getting information from the board, which I completely agree with, you know, the transparency issues there have been huge, but I guess I just want to give some thought to, you know, whether it would have more impact if it looks like, you know, something one AC or SO came up with that others then just kind of did a precursory, well, I sign on to that too. Or if it would have more impact if, you know, each AC or SO that had a concern or questions submitted separately, which would have the most impact. And, you know, I don't know what the exact answer to that is, but I just want to give some consideration to that before we just decide to turn on to one.
Sure, it's a good question. What's your leaning, Tim? What would you?
I kind of lean towards the individual ones. In other words, each of us considered this, and it's a concern that we each have. It's not we just didn't sign on to be friendly to somebody else's concerns.
Thank you. Does anybody disagree with Tim's leaning there? Shall we just approach it that way? And I can tell Cheryl that the GNSO is going to do something independently, and it may be that it's more effective if it comes independently from the different organizations. And I see Stefan agreeing with that. So anybody want to comment? Stefan, go ahead. Comment.
No, sorry, Chuck. I'm getting my raised hands and agreements mixed up. I wanted to agree, not raise my hand.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw your check mark first. I thought that would, but that's good. Okay. Good. And Bill, why don't you disagree? Why don't you explain, please?
Well, I mean, I think I've probably already belabored this on the list. but it seemed to me that it's sort of an act of good faith. In a way, we agreed at the outset to collaborate with them on this effort. We adopted a motion endorsing it. It seems to kind of like at this stage step back from that kind of collaboration when we have fairly parallel kinds of concerns, and simply make our own statement for the purpose of making the statement ours and not a collaborative one is kind of an odd approach. I mean, I don't really see... I understand the concerns that Tim raised about the sort of larger trajectory that he's concerned about, and I agree. There is not a generalizable desire to take away the GNSO process, and I don't think that that does that. But in this particular case, we entered into a collaborative effort and supported it. So I can't see why we would now want to walk away from that mindset.
Thanks, Bill. And I think probably, as most of you know, that I strongly support the collaborative works efforts between the various SOs and ACs as long as we don't give up our own policymaking responsibility. So I totally respect those concerns. At the same time, I'm not sure that if we decide to do something independently that it really goes counter to that. So that's just a personal comment. As much as I like collaboration, I don't think it necessarily does that. Who was that?
This was Tim.
Okay. Just a second, Tim. Let me get Stefan in, and then you can jump in, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. I mostly agree with what you've just said. I just wanted to say that it's not a question of being against the collaborative effort. It's just a question of really identifying clearly what we're getting ourselves into and making sure that we don't give up on our own policymaking responsibilities. So I don't think it's a question of being against what has been suggested by Bill and others. I hope Bill didn't get that impression. I think it's just, you know, making sure that we tread carefully here.
Yeah, and I appreciate that comment. My advice to us all is let's, of course, never not keep our responsibility as the GNSO for policy development. But at the same time, in our protection of that, let's not give the impression to the rest of the community who are also impacted by GNSO policy that we're not, ready and willing to collaborate and work together with them. And in some cases, that's going to be a little bit different process than what we use because the other SOs and ACs operate differently than us. So, and I don't think I'm not suggesting that anybody really wants to do anything different than that. But I just think we need to be cautious to make sure that the right attitude goes forth when we raise valid concerns that we have. So we have some people to work on that. I will respond to Cheryl and tell her what's going on and try and word it in a very tactful way so that she fully appreciates. And knowing Cheryl, I don't think that'll be any problem. So, and
hey, Chuck, this was Tim. I was in the queue, right?
I'm sorry, Tim. I jumped ahead in response to Stefan. Go ahead.
Just quickly, I guess my impression was that we were going to be asking about, you know, getting additional information on all of the decisions that were made by the board at that meeting. If we're talking about, you know, specific requests in regards to, you know, MAPO or the JAS, whatever, then, you know, those requests would naturally come from those groups. And to whatever extent that the council, you know, chose to support or be involved in those, and I guess that's a different issue. But my feeling is that what we should be asking for is more information in general and not just on a specific one or two decisions. I'd like to see it on all of them. So that was the concern that I had, and I thought that us asking for that individually would have more impact.
Yeah, and that's my understanding as well. It was for all of them. At the same time, the JAS Working Group has a specific request that they would like to request, and I believe that they have already submitted that request for additional information. So it's probably okay, don't you think, Tim, if we kind of reinforce that, that it'll help them do their final report. So they, to the extent that that can be expedited, that would be appreciated.
Yeah, I have no issues with that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. Okay. Well, we're way over, so here we go. Let's move on to item number three, and that's the GTLD Recommendation 6 Community Working Group. And I would like to point out in that one that, you know, I think that particular recommendation, I don't think any of us would argue, is a public policy issue. So there was justification from the ICANN bylaws for certainly involvement of the GAC, and so with that in mind, let me ask Margie to give a very brief summary of that report.
Sure, Chuck, and I have a number of slides here, but I'm not going to go through them because they actually highlight the recommendations, but we just don't have time for it, and certainly this will be available for you all to look at, and you can also reflect on the actual report. But as you guys all know, the group is tasked with looking at the implementation guidelines that related to Recommendation 6, and I have it posted right now. The working group did not try to revisit Recommendation 6, but merely provide guidelines that would address the concerns of the GAC, the GNSO, and the at-large communities. For those of you that weren't involved in the group, it was a pretty intense effort over about a three-week period, meeting three, maybe four times a week, and producing a report in a very short time frame. I've highlighted the recommendations in this chart, which I will not go through on this call, but there was it was notable that within this group, we did the group did achieve consensus levels on several issues. And for example, there was consensus that the implementation model for Recommendation 6 that was proposed in Draft Applicant Guidebook Version 4 was flawed, and there were a number of recommendations that had either full support, full consensus, or strong support. And as you flip through these slides, and I'll allow you to do that if you have any interest in the information, you can go ahead and see the kinds of issues that the group evaluated and the levels of consensus that were associated with it. I'm going to skip. I just don't think we have time unless you want me to go through an overview of the recommendations, Chuck.
No, we don't have time for that.
Okay. So you can see.
But I would like to ask you, Margie, to send the slides to the list so that people can do that at their leisure.
Sure. And as you scroll through these, you'll see that there were many recommendations that had consensus or full consensus. And I think that was an incredible effort on the part of the working group to come up with these recommendations. Unfortunately, they did not get delivered to the board until the day before the retreat. So as Kurt indicated before, I don't think they had sufficient time to really evaluate the recommendations. I'm now on slide 13 with respect to next steps. There is a public comment period open until October 22nd. As of today, there are no comments posted yet. The important point is that the report suggests that each supporting organization and advisory committee should review and comment as appropriate. And I think this highlights Kurt's comments earlier today that as this is a community working group, we need to work within the framework of the bylaws, and so to the extent that there are issues that relate to policy, we may want to have action on the part of the GNSO Council with respect to those recommendations. The other thing that I want to note is that there was the resolution, and Kurt discussed that earlier, so the recommendation, that actual text from the resolution is here on this slide. And Chuck, with that, I think I'll close unless anyone has any questions.
Okay, and let me throw it over to Christina.
I actually don't have any questions. I was just jumping ahead in the agenda questions to note that the IPC has not yet formed its views on this, but I personally think that we would be better off having comments come from the individual SG's constituencies as opposed to the council itself.
Thank you for leading right into the next agenda item. That's great. So, and by the way, there's a practical matter, too. We don't have another council meeting till the 28th, and I think, you know, GNSO-wide comments would be very difficult to produce with in the short time frame without having at least one meeting to work on it. So does anybody object to Christina's suggestion there that comments we defer to the individual stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as individuals, it doesn't just have to be those groups, for submitting comments on this issue and on in this comment period. Anybody object to that? Okay. So we'll go that round. Now, that doesn't mean that every SGN constituency has to submit comments. Obviously, that's up to the respective groups. I certainly would encourage, if not comments to that list, to that comment period, that on our council list, if there are people, because I've watched the discussion, for the most part I've laid back and just let the discussion go and not participated personally, but to the extent that anybody thinks that that community working group suggested anything that went contrary to the policy development work, I would love to see that. I really tried myself to manage that, and I wasn't the only one involved in that, but to manage that in a way that we were consistent with the policy that was recommended. So I welcome, strongly welcome, any comments if you think that we diverged from that. It was quite a challenge to manage that in a short time period. But my own feeling, and I've shared this with Kurt separately, is that I don't think any of the recommendations really went in a significantly different direction than certainly what was in nothing different from the policy that was recommended by the GNSO Council and approved by the board, but also with regard to the implementation plan that's in Applicant Guidebook 4. So please comment, at least on the council list, if you think any of those things really do diverge and shouldn't be supported by the board. Please submit those views on the comment list. And certainly, at the same time, if you think that there's value in the work, in the recommendations that came out of that community working group, I think it's healthy to communicate those as well. Any questions or comments on that? I want to give special thanks to everyone who participated, and there were lots of GNSO participants, and some of you are on this call, and I express my special thanks and compliments for the way you contributed, as well as to everyone on that in that working group. And then, of course, special thanks need to go to Margie and Marika, because we really put them through the ropes. And they responded remarkably. So thank you very, very much. All right, going on. And by the way, you know, this will be talked about later as we look at the agenda with the CCNSO in particular, but maybe with the ALAC as well and the GAC in all three of those organizations, at least in Cartagena. You know, this whole concept of community working groups is one that, you know, the ICANN community hasn't dealt with in terms of process. So, and we've talked about it in the past with the CCNSO. We're always also busy that we haven't done anything with it, but I think that's a prime topic, and I'll kind of leave that for Stefan and Glenn as they work on the agendas for Cartagena. Going on to, I see a hand. Okay, Adrian.
Yes, Chuck. I just wanted to ask very quickly. We, as chair of that group, were you elected? The board didn't get to read or consider your report fully. And did you ever confer with the board to ask them at what date would they like the document in order to have enough time for them to read it?
Well, first of all, let me be clear that. An initial report was sent meeting the 11-day advance guideline that the board has for that retreat, okay? And that contained a large majority of where the group was going. What it didn't contain was some of the final levels of that we hadn't had time to fairly generate yet. So there was something presented to the board, delivered to the board over 11 days in advance of the retreat. Now, we weren't able to get the final report done 11 days in advance. I don't know why it was not delivered to the board until a day before the retreat, because we did finish it, I think it was 5 or 6 days before the retreat actually started. Maybe I'm wrong on that. It might have just been 2 or 3. But anyway, regardless, they had most of the information with quite a bit of lead time. Now, I just as a personal comment, Adrian, I had a chance to talk with one board member directly after the retreat, and that board member indicated that had not had time to read the report, and I encouraged that board member to, you know, go through it. We intentionally didn't make it very long, and if you just focus on the recommendations, it's even a shorter read. And I said, just check it out. See if you see anything that's inconsistent and so forth, because it's not a hard read. It was designed to be straightforward. So I hope that for board members who didn't go through the report, that they will do that before their next board meeting. Did that respond okay, Adrian? Was that okay? Okay. Margie?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify one comment that we issued the report to the board as soon as it was published, so there was no delay on the staff part, but I believe we didn't finish the report until the 21st, which was Tuesday, and the board retreat. Thursday, Friday, so it wasn't a delay on staff part. It was that it took that long to get the report.
Yeah, thanks for, you know, as the more I was talking, the more I realized I think that I was, it did take us longer to get all those levels of support determined. So thanks a lot, Mark.
Chuck,
yes.
It's Adrian. I was on mute and I was trying to respond. It still concerns me that we have to convince and coerce the board to read a paper. I appreciate your efforts and certainly the efforts of the entire working group. It just frustrates me that given, you know, the importance of the document and how much effort went in, that the board didn't make a special effort to get it and therefore just said, oh, no, we're not considering it. You know, I find it astounding that you have to convince a board member to take a look at a paper. It's incredibly frustrating to me, given that this process could be delayed you know, based on some of this work. Thanks.
Yeah, and just a comment on your last statement. One of my personal objectives in my shared leadership of that group was to do everything possible to not give any excuses for delays, and so that's why we rushed it the way we did. So hopefully it won't result in delays. I think with the board resolution that's very realistic now, that there need not be any delays associated with that, but obviously that's not my decision or even the council's decision. Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate it. Let's go on to, so I think we've covered everything on item 3. Let's go to item 4, and we have the excerpt from the draft final report, the new GTLD applicant support working group. And again, we've talked about this some already because it relates to the time we had with Kurt and the board resolutions from the retreat, so we won't repeat a lot of that. And we know that the report is, you know, was submitted in short order, you know, before the retreat too, a draft summary of where they were going. Anyway, let me give Rafiq a couple minutes here to just briefly share a little bit about what was in that report.
Thank you, Chuck. To say that we are continuing to work on the final document that in the jazz working group. First, we try to identify the potential applicant for that can request need the request assistance, and we think that the main criteria is the need. So only needy applicant will receive assistance.
You want the slide?
Yeah, I can. So we defined a set of applicant, like those community-based application for cultural, linguistic, and ethnic, NGO, civil society, and non-profit. Those applicants who are geographically located in emerging markets and developing countries, and those application in language whose presence on the web is limited. But also we think that we can include an entrepreneur wanting to serve a developing market that may not be sustainable. One of the first recommendation from the working group was about fee reduction. So there was different suggestion in that matter, like waived development cost or a staggered payment of the fee. And we also thought about like a partial refund from any action proceeds, and also to lower the registry fixed fees for the needy applicant. Now about possible types of sources, either from distributed by an ICANN originate find, so that we can think that can be a kind of fundraising, and to have a fund to help those applicant who need assistance, but also from external funding agency. And then the ICANN will only provide applicant information to those external funding agency, and then they need to meet a condition established by those corresponding corresponding programs. As other consideration, those needy applicants are free to approach other external funding agencies of their own initiative. And another consideration that I can to have a development director to secure $10 million for ICANN-based development fund. And also to work with other development funding agency to set up funding programs. And for assistance, it shouldn't be more than 50% as financial aid for the reduced fee that the ICANN can provide. And also we suggested to have a sunset point at like 5 years. So, as other consideration, all these requests should be made public for the transparency principle, and that this program is not designed to subsidize government-led initiative. Even if there, if there is some government support, it should be okay, and we don't exclude such application. If in the case that supported GSD make revenue significantly above and beyond cost, the recipients can somehow repay and. To repay and for revolving funding to support future application. It's kind of participation from those applicants to help other. Okay. So we have some funds still in discussion, like voluntary contribution by registrar to the development program for registrar to registry contribution, and also discussion about pending for the case IDM for the IDM GTLD. Okay, so we defined some next steps, like a creation of a joint team of staff and SOIC members, and establishing the criteria for financial need and method of demonstrating that need, and establishing the method for coordinating cooperation among qualified applicant and assistant volunteers by third parties. I think that this one is included in the board resolution. Begin to work of fundraising and establishing links to possible donor agency, and to review the basis of the 100,000 US dollar application base fee to determine its full origin and to determine what percentage of that fee should be waived for applicant. So, just to update that, because the experts, because we in that working group, we continued, we kept working, and we take in consideration, we took both the board response but also the GAG letter into account. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rafik. Please raise your hand or speak up if you'd like to ask a question or comment, make a comment. Now, Rafik, while people are thinking about that, is there a deadline for the input to the working group?
So, what do you mean about public comments?
I mean, when do you need any additional comments or suggestions from the GNSO members?
I think that we have in this agenda discussion if the council will provide comments and or we will ask the different constituency and stakeholder groups to submit comments.
And do you need those in a week, in 2 weeks? What's your target?
I'm not sure about that.
Would you let just send a message to the list later after you consult with the co-chairs and see what's a reasonable target to get feedback. And then so that the SGs and constituencies know, as well as all the councillors. Let's move on then to the next question.
Sorry, just to make sure that I should ask about the deadline that we will finish, that working group will finish its work, or a deadline for getting feedback from the stakeholder groups and constituency.
Well, the latter is what I was specifically referring to, but I think everybody would probably like to know a target for your final report as well. The most urgent thing is to know if a group wants to submit comments, how long do they have to do that so that you can incorporate them in your final report? So if you can provide some clarification on that. Is that clear?
Okay, yeah.
Thanks. So, again, from a practical point of view, because time is of the essence here, I think, you know, very similar to the previous agenda item, it's going to be very difficult, I think, to do any GNSO-wide comments on this or get comments from the council. Plus, I suspect we might have some diversity on this as well as other items. So does anybody disagree with the approach to leave it up with SGs and the constituencies to submit comments as they see fit? And, of course, individuals can always comment as well. Anybody disagree with that? Okay. I do want to give special thanks to the Jazz Working Group members and the co-chairs.
Sorry, Chuck. Just I want really that to urge the different stakeholder groups and constituency to provide comments, because I think that in the working group we expecting that the ICANN community participate in that effort.
Okay.
To assist. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So again, I think it would be, they have worked really hard and a lot of meetings and have been working for quite a long period of time. So they spent a lot of time on this. It was something that the board requested from the community. And so feedback is really important. So I encourage each of the stakeholder groups and constituencies to try and submit some comments on this in whatever time frame is left to do that, and Rafiq will communicate that to us. Okay. I'm going to make a chair decision and come back to item 5 on the agenda, not because it's not important. We've been putting it off for too long already, but I want to make sure we get a few other things done that aren't quite so time-consuming as item 5 on prioritization. So I will come back to there and then use what time we have left. Going to item 6, the selections for the affirmation of commitments review teams. This is really an information item. There is one kind of confirmation of a decision that we also have to do there. You can see in the table on item 6.2 the selections for the Security and Stability Review Team and the Who Is Team. We probably should have deleted the word primary because that's irrelevant anymore, and I missed that. But there are three for the SSR team: Jeff Brueggemann, David Cake, and Ken Silva. And then for the Who Is, we have Susan Kawaguchi, sorry about that, Kim Von Arx, James Bladel, and Kathy Kleiman. So those selections are pending review of their interest statements, et cetera. So, but I think that having read all of those interest statements, I'd be really surprised if those selections aren't confirmed as communicated there. And notice also that the Willie Curry, who was a selection for the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, was unable to continue on that review team because he accepted a government position, thereby making him ineligible for the review team. So the non-commercial stakeholder group has spent quite a bit of time identifying a replacement, and has requested that. Both Peter and Heather are supportive of that. They're just waiting for confirmation from the GNSO that we endorse Carlos Afonso Pereira de Souza to replace Willie on that review team. And I had asked for any comments, objections, or whatever on the list, I think the end of last week or over the weekend, I can't exactly remember. I want to offer that up one more time. Are there any objections to endorsing the replacement of Willie by Carlos? Any objections to that? Seeing none and hearing none, I will send a message to Peter and Heather right after this meeting, and CC Avery as chair of the NCSG, that endorsement it takes place. Any discussion on the AOC review teams? Going then to item 7, the suggested improvements for GNSO public council meetings. I confess to being disappointed that we have not received any recommendations from the volunteers there, although I do thank those who have been participating on the list, talking about some constructive suggestions for improvements. One of the things I thought that was very positive in our meeting, in our wrap-up meeting in Brussels, was the fact that some good, you know, suggestions were being thought of in terms of improvements. It'd be really good if we could implement some of those in Cartagena. Unfortunately, we're running up against the clock. I know it still seems like a long ways away, but agendas and so forth have to be set up, and in particular, meeting time plannings have to be set up quite a bit in advance to fit them into a very full schedule. So, Wendy, do you have anything to contribute here with regard to proposed recommendations, since you're the one that volunteered to lead that effort?
If I can be heard at this point.
I can hear you fine.
I sent a summary of the group's discussions to the list. I thought there would be that would be more efficient than spending time talking about them on the call.
Because some of us haven't been watching our email, I'm just now looking at it. Could you quickly go over those?
The most important points on which there seemed to be relative agreement among the group: afternoon meeting preferable to morning because lots of the networking takes place late evening. We should live editing during an open meeting is boring and ineffective and inefficient, so do as much motion editing and preparation during the weekend session and online rather than during our open meeting. Identify counselors on their name tags with a line that includes their stakeholder group and constituency affiliation. Advertise to the public in ways that let them know what this meeting is, when it is, and what they are expected to be able to do there. And make sure that tea and coffee are available nearby so we don't have to spend 15 minutes at each break trying to go find it.
Thank you very much. Those seem really constructive to me and helpful. Any discussion on any of those? Does anybody disagree with
Chuck? Chuck, this is Stefan. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Stefan.
Sorry, I couldn't get the Adobe to work in time. I just wanted to ask about the scheduling of the meeting in the afternoon. Are we to consider, we being Glenn and I, that there's sufficient consensus on that for us to schedule the next Open Council meeting, which is the one we'll have in December, at 2 p.m.? The reason I'm asking the question is that, as you can imagine, there will be knock-on effects for the people at ICANN that are tasked with organizing the actual meeting agenda. It's the whole meeting agenda. So the earlier we can signal that to them, the better it is.
So, Stefan, let me make sure I understand your question. So your question is there sufficient support on the council right now to move forward with that recommendation? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Christina, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily, well, to be blunt, I'm fine with having it in the morning as long as we're not starting at 8 a.m. So if we can have a shorter meeting and start at 9, that would be perfect. And as for the motion editing, I completely agree. I think we just need to be cognizant of the fact that in a lot of cases we're working on these motions on the weekend, and then we have the intervening constituency day, so it's often not possible to have everything final until after constituency day.
Good points. Okay. Anybody else want to comment? Is there pretty good consensus that the meeting at least needs to start later? Afternoon would be okay. Anybody opposed to an afternoon meeting if they can fit that into the schedule? obviously the what has previously been workshops and so forth in the afternoon would probably have would possibly have to be moved to the morning. I don't know that that's not possible, so that would be an impact there. But anybody opposed to this general direction? I see Bill Drake's in favor of it. Okay. Anybody else want to comment?
Chuck, this is Glenn.
Yes, Glenn, go ahead.
May I ask one question? I have been talking to the meeting staff, and if we move the meeting from the morning to the afternoon, there is the possibility that we will not have the big room that we are usually in, which is called either a ballroom or whatever it is, but that we would have our GNSO working room, which will take up to about 100 participants, and we will have a U-shape. Is there any objection to keeping that room for our Open GNSO Council meeting? We will have audio casting, and we will have remote live scribing if we're in that room.
Thank you, Glenn. Does anybody object to that solution? Stefan?
Yeah, thanks. I want to thank Glenn for making that point because it's an important one. One of the reasons, and Wendy will correct me if I'm not putting the group's meaning across clearly, but one of the reasons that I understood for proposing the afternoon time was that we'd get better participation. So one of the ways of doing that was to be in the main room, but rather than be in there in the morning where people don't tend to get up early enough to participate in the meeting, we'd stay in the main room but be there in the afternoon, advertise the meetings better, and therefore hope to get more people participating. So if we change rooms to a secondary room, part of that objective we may not be able to reach that. Just wanted people to keep that in mind.
Thank you, Stefan. Good point. Alan?
I'll confirm that that was the intent of the group.
Sorry, what was that, Wendy?
I just confirmed that the intent was to get more participation from the other members of the ICANN community, not merely
Thank you. Alan?
Yeah, if you look at recent rooms, occasionally we have seats around the edge and a small viewing gallery at one end. Other times it's so tight that we barely have room for seats around the edge. If you take the typical GNSO council meeting, I think that would completely defeat the purpose of an open meeting.
And just to follow up on some of the comments, and this is my own, these are my own personal observations. I'm curious as to why the big room would not be available, and where I'm coming from is this. It makes it sound like they have some other really important meetings that are going to need a lot of space that will be conflicting with our meeting, and if that's the case, that creates a problem because there should be as minimal conflicts as possible during our meeting. So I'm concerned about why that big room is needed, because to me it says that they're planning on some maybe serious conflicts with the GNSO council meeting. That would be my own personal observation there. Did that make sense, Glenn and Stefan?
Yeah, it does. I don't know if Glenn has the answer to that. I don't.
Well, the advantage is that I'm here in Marina Del Rey at the moment and that I can go and discuss this with the meeting team after this meeting.
Okay, good.
So I'll do my best.
You follow what I'm getting at there, right, Glenn?
Yes, thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, okay, good. Thanks, and thanks for being on site to work this issue. Appreciate it. So, okay, thanks a lot for the work of everyone that contributed. Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, Stefan and Glenn, for continuing to work on the scheduling. Not seeing any other hands, let's go to item 8, the status of continued action items. Let me tell you that on item 8.1, the drafting team for the draft for the DNS cert, it's an SSR working group charter, is very close. In fact, I have something in my inbox that came in during this meeting that probably will be a draft that's ready to give to the drafting team to start working on. We've had quite a few iterations this week, thanks to Julie, who's probably on this call, for all the work she's done in that, as well as Bart, in working up a draft. And what that is just a straw man for the drafting team to start with. So that drafting team, if you're on it, will probably you start seeing that charter either today or tomorrow. 8-2, the Standing Committee to Monitor GNSO Improvements. We have an issue to discuss there. And first of all, we had asked last time for some feedback from the steering committees, and I'm going to ask Rob if he would provide what feedback we've received.
Thanks, Chuck. Let me tee up a little bit for you guys in about 45 seconds the issue that we're addressing right now. After the board approved the standing committee concept in Brussels, and then after your last meeting, we did some extra research from a staff perspective. And the key there is that right now the existing steering committee charters already include a number of the responsibilities I think that the council intended for this new standing committee. Particularly, the OSC charter says that once recommendations have been implemented, the OSC will be responsible for reviewing and assessing the effectiveness of these new improvements and for recommending further operational enhancements as warranted. So we have a situation where there's some dueling or duplicative potential work between this new standing committee and the existing OSC. Additionally, of the six volunteers who have stepped forward to staff this new standing committee, the majority, fully four of them, are already on the OSC. So I reached out to Philip Shepard in his capacity as chair of the OSC and suggested that we really had a couple of different options. I'll share with you his feedback. His view is that our two options really are either to, quote unquote, revoke the new improvement group and continue with the existing OSC and PPC as reviewing or revision bodies, or alternatively, dilute or basically eliminate those groups in place of this new standing committee. Now, his thought was that the first option was probably the simplest and most attractive line to take because basically we're just using an existing body. Particularly, this is important because on the PPSC side, that steering committee and those work teams really haven't concluded their work. So it just seems that given the fact that right now the OSC is the group that has put forward the most recommendations approved by the GNSO, since they already have the obligation in their charters to do the work, and since the members of the volunteer group primarily come from that group, it would seem to be the most administratively efficient approach just to task the OSC initially with these review and implementation responsibilities. Then at some future point when the PPSC has concluded its work, you guys can then investigate the broader consideration of a standing committee to oversee the responsibilities of both groups. That was a little longer than 45 seconds, Chuck. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, Rob, just a follow-up to that. It seems to me that kind of a hybrid approach would be to use the steering committees until all of the working team work is finished and the council has acted on the recommendations, and then possibly consider starting the standing committee at that time. Does that make sense?
It does. And the only additional thing I would suggest is two things. First, that it would likely require, with the steering committee charters expiring in Cartagena, for the council to renew them for an additional period. And secondly, because there is some fresh blood in Rudy and Tatiana who are volunteering to participate in this group, I would think it would be fairly easy for the OSC to just welcome them as part of that committee, and so you could take advantage of their interest and willingness to participate in the effort.
And I don't recall, it's been a while since I looked at the charters for the steering committees, but I don't think they were ever intended to be so fixed in membership that we couldn't add people or whatever. And certainly we've lost people on them. So to me, that sounds fine. So, okay. Can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Chuck.
Okay, so, all right, good. Thank you. Does anybody, okay, Mary, please comment.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck, and I apologize for any interference on my end. But I guess I was just curious, just one question either to Rob or someone else. The OSC is continuing because there are other items on its plate that aren't quite finished. Is that right? I'm sorry for not keeping track, but simple
question. That is correct. And we're actually going to get to a little bit of that in just a moment as part of the agenda item that we're on. The OSC and the CSG work team are still working together with regard to recommendations for outreach in particular. That task hasn't been finished yet. We're going to talk a minute about whether or not the GCOT, the GNSO Council Operations Team, should continue to work. They are continuing to work based on issues that we talked about at the very beginning of this call, the disclosures of interest and so forth. So even though the OSC work teams are very far along, they're not done yet. Okay? So does that answer your question okay?
Yes, it does. And I guess my concern is, and I don't know what many of these items are, my concern is that there doesn't seem to be a date or a process for work teams, and maybe there is, and we haven't done it in this instance. But that also seems to me to be a different reason for, you know, not having a standing committee or postponing the launch of the steering or standing committee. I'm getting lost. Standing committee. So maybe one of the things is, I think we've already approved the standing committee's formation, and since there are already some volunteers who are also on the OSC on that, could we at least, because I know we're running out of time, at least have them discuss the roles of both the OSC and the standing committee in this respect get back to us on it?
I don't think I fully understand what they would be doing. Could you clarify that for me?
Yeah, my understanding from what Rob said from his conversations with Philip is that because the OSC, for example, is still running, that for now at least some of these questions should go back to the OSC, and therefore the standing committee doesn't really need to do anything until such time as these other committees end and are disbanded. I'm a little uncomfortable with that because that seems kind of open-ended to me, especially as we've already approved the formation of the standing committee. So I thought at the very least, maybe the standing committee and the OSC should discuss their respective roles. I would like to see the standing committee, get certain things done that may not be within the remit of the OSC, for example.
Well, we, of course, have to define what is not overlapping in terms of what they do. Any other thoughts on that?
This is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
So if I understand it, it sounds like one of the things that's being recommended is we allow the steering committees to deal with this instead of the standing committee. The reason I would support that is because it just seems to me we have a lot going on, and to start getting redundant, I'm just not sure that's a wise direction for us to go. And if we can use the existing bodies, then it seems to me that that's a much more efficient way to deal with this.
Thank you, Tim. Mary?
Yeah, and I understand that. And actually, I think I was trying to avoid redundancies. And if my understanding is wrong, I apologize. But I thought that there were quite a number of items that are done in the implementation phase. And I guess I'm starting from the perspective that those items that are considered done really kind of move out of the OSC, which would be dealing with the items that remain. So at least for those items that are done, that's kind of where the standing committee should come in as some sort of oversight team, in which case there would not be redundancies, but actually probably better clarity.
So what you've done there, I think, is helpful in the sense that you define the line between the two in cases where it's just monitoring of what has been implemented. That could be the new standing committee, whereas the steering committees continue to oversee the work that's still ongoing. Now, as Rob pointed out, there is in the charter for the steering committees a provision that they could do some of the tasks that we're now envisioning for the standing committee, but that could be, so it's not against their charter to do that. Let me suggest this because we're just about out of time, we consider this a little bit further. For right now, I think that it's best to let the steering committees do what they're doing, and we'll take this issue up again in our next meeting. Rob, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. That was a little bit ago. Yeah, I think just basically what has happened, at least in this intervening time frame, is the council has in itself created this duplicative body given the charter of the existing OSC, and we're just trying to help you guys not take on additional work. Obviously, this new standing committee doesn't have a charter yet, and so, now that's a working group that has to prepare a charter of the new standing committee, and it just seems administratively challenging when you already have a charter and a group that already has duties.
And a very specific question that we need to discuss on this call very quickly is the one with regard to the GCOT. As all of you are very aware, the issue with regard to disclosures of interest has raised a lot of concerns in terms of the procedures that we all approved and that we're now frustrated with. So, going back to Adrian's comment, concern about board members not reading stuff, I think we have some pretty good examples of ourselves not carefully reviewing some stuff because we're busy. So, anyway, we have a problem there. So the question is very simple, and it's been raised by Aubrey as chair of the NCSG. I don't know if it was in her capacity as chair, but anyway, that should we could use the standing committee to review the issues with regard to disclosures of interest and other issues related to procedures that we've already approved, or we can use the GCOT that's already formed and never was formally disbanded, and who is very familiar with the issues to help us deal with those procedures and possibly come back working with the OSC to recommend some modifications to the procedures that are more tenable for a lot of us. What is the leaning of the council? Stefan. You must be on mute.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I like the idea of using the standing committee for this, just because it feels like having a fresh set of eyes might help us avoid issues like we're having with these DOIs where we just all missed it. And now that we have to put it into practice, we find out how burdensome it is. So I just like the fresh set of eyes idea, although I understand that the GCOT has that experience. It may be useful to get a fresh set of eyes on this.
Thank you, and I see Bill Drake likes that idea too. One concern I have about that in my conversations with Ray Fassett on this particular issue, I'm getting the impression that the language we approved didn't reflect well what the GCOT intended. So I would like to suggest that at least in the short term that we see what they come back with, and then maybe in our next meeting decide whether we want to get that fresh set of eyes and get the standing committee going. But again, like has been pointed out, like Rob pointed out, we're going to have to develop a charter, I think, some and that's going to take some time. So it's going to be more expeditious, I think, possibly to get some improvements in the procedures that we can benefit from sooner if we use the GCOT. Rob?
Can I suggest a radical approach? The council seems to have some consensus that you just don't like the new procedure. Why couldn't you just have a motion to amend the procedures and delete that provision?
That's a possibility.
The other thing I'd just like to observe is that this concept of a fresh set of eyes, and maybe I wasn't clear earlier, of the six volunteers, four are existing steering committee members, so that you only really have two pairs of fresh eyes at present.
Thank you. Okay. Wolf. Wolf must be on mute.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Okay, good.
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I have some problems with creating a new group and could follow Rob's arguments in this respect. So my suggestion would be why people who are interested in amending those things don't participate in the GCOT, because the GCOT is ongoing to discuss those procedures, and they are reviewing again because they got the information here from the council and from people that there are problems with using the procedures as they are at the time being. So my suggestion would be that people should participate in the meetings. We have there are ongoing meetings every week or almost every 2 weeks about those items. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolf. And what I'm going to suggest, because we're out of time, is that that we proceed as is happening right now with the GCOT, looking at it. If there are any fresh eyes that want to join the GCOT, please do so. And then we'll revisit this issue in our next meeting on the 28th. Going quickly on then to the 8.3, the high-level progress of House and stakeholder group elections. Councilor elections for terms that end, the chair and vice chair nominations, the NCA assignments. I want to quickly report on behalf of the, I was going to let Caroline do it, but just to be fast, I'm going to, for the registries, the two open council seats elections are just about done. One has been filled. The other one is essentially filled. The period hasn't quite ended for voting, but it's both seats will be filled. Do any other stakeholder groups have reports in terms of your upcoming council seats that become open? None? Okay. Again, those things need to happen so that we can deal with chair and vice chair issues, and also NCA assignments, because those need to be revisited again so we know which NCAs go to the contracted party's house, the non-contracted party's house, and which one is in the non-voting position. So please make sure that your groups are dealing with those, hopefully are already dealing with those, because that really needs to be done enough in advance so we can deal with chair and vice chair. We know who the NCA reps are, so that information is needed, and I ask the stakeholder groups to please be, and houses to be working on that. Going on to who is studies, Liz, I'm going to...
Can I stop you for a second on that? Is there a deadline as to when you think or the council election should be held?
The council elections for the councilors?
Yeah, for example, for my seat, which is coming open, you know, we started talking about it, but there doesn't seem to be any real urgency in my constituency at this point. I think we're planning on doing an election later this month, but do we need to move that up?
Well, you don't have to. I mean, it's your call. The reason pushing it and the reason this agenda item is on there is because and there's a possibility that especially in cases where a counselor is eligible for another term, that we know who the counselors are so we know who the eligible persons are for chair and vice chair.
Right, I understand that. So, you know, that means to me that you would need results at least by, what, the first week in November?
I would think no later than that.
All right.
Does that help?
I think so. Thanks.
Good. You're welcome. Good question. Okay. Liz, I'm going to give you a minute for Who Is Studies.
It took me that long to get off mute. Hi, Liz Gaster here. I'm just going to update you on the Who Is Reveal study first, which is study number 4, and then the Who Is Abuse study number 3. Number 4, the Reveal study, we posted an RFP on the 29th of September. The deadline for responses is the 30th of November. We are requesting bids from independent researchers that will help us determine the cost and feasibility of that study. When the deadline closes at the 30th of November, staff will analyze the responses given and provide an analysis to you. This process is delayed from what you originally asked for because of the time it took to get the terms of reference right with the community. So I think people were hoping when we first talked about this a couple of months ago that I would have the analysis done by the end of November in order to discuss it in December, but that's not going to happen given how long it took to get the terms of reference right. Secondly, on the abuse study, again, that was also delayed because we needed to, our analysis was delayed because we needed to go back to a couple of the submitters and get some additional information from them. But we did receive 3 responses. 2 were very strong, 1 in particular, but 2. I have provided analysis as of the 5th of October. I encourage you to read that. I'm happy to answer any questions people have, and I think we'll be discussing it at the next GNS.
That is correct, and thank you for being brief, Liz. So Who Is Study 3, the abuse study, will be the focus of it will be on our agenda next time, and so that means that we will at that time have 2 studies that we haven't dealt with, Study 2 and Study 3, and so I encourage discussion on the list, especially with Who Is Study 3. We have some new information on that Liz just referred to, so that we can begin to make decisions on what other studies besides Study 1 that we want to pursue in this fiscal year. So be thinking about that and be prepared. Obviously, if there are groups that want to pursue any of the studies that are ready, which means 2 and 3, then ultimately we'll need a motion in that regard. Going on quickly to Item 9, David, do you have a brief answer to Christina's question with regard to compliance personnel, director of compliance and additional compliance personnel, or is that something that would be better handled on the list?
I could quickly report that, Chuck, because I'm also here at MDR, I talked to the HR people. The 3 positions, the selection process is ongoing, and I mentioned that I was going to report to the council about this, but that's about all the detail I have from them.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you keeping the council informed on that as the next few weeks proceed. Well, we ended up not having any time for prioritization. It's not because I don't think that's important, but we're going to have to defer that to the next meeting. My apologies for that. I really don't want to defer it any further because we do need to deal with that. So we're over time already. Anything else before we close? Bill.
Well, that's not my hand up, Chuck. That's the applause sign.
Oh, I'm sorry. My screen's kind of small, so I can't tell the difference with that one and the hand raised unless I really look closely. So thank you. And anybody else? All right. Thank you, everyone. Apologize for going over. Have a good rest of the day, and we'll be talking a lot on the list. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Chuck.
All right. Thank you.
All right.